Blog Talk Radio.
Style of these beautiful composite words.
And today there's a celebration of nationhood, of the status of people coming together and forming within the framework of Canada, the Nunavut. And so to all of those people who worked so very hard, and for all of those people that were hesitant, saying it was too soon, that we needed another generation or two in order to train the youth to assume the positions. Well, time didn't wait, did it? Time didn't wait. We had a political agenda. And so the wisdom of the elders was what it was, at least when you were there witnessing it all. The elders were saying one thing, and the leaders, the politicians, the elected officials were saying something else, as if the elders couldn't make those changes and move things ahead. They certainly could. They just saw a different time frame and a different set of components that was sidestepped in a way. So to all of those celebrating Nunavut Day today, I say kudos to you. Kudos to you and to your courage and tenacity in handling great hardships that most of us couldn't even begin to imagine. Today we have an interesting commentary. As you saw, new narratives, fusion within Masonic environments. It is just that, the program today. But I want to start the day off with a little something somber and focusing. If truly we're going to be proving the conditions, you know, providing you with the conditions for learning, it's important that that we start with a touchstone. And for us here at Masonic Effects, that touchstone is it. Throughout the program today, I'm going to throw out some quotes, as I'm prone to do. But instead of telling you who they are, who originated these quotes, I'm going to leave that to the end. And I want you to take the opportunity to puzzle them out. Who's saying these things? Here. And there's more here than I can go through in a program. Try not to Google them until the end, you know, you big silly. The first, of course, is this. The measure of intelligence is the ability to change. Now, take this little dose of Sophie Millman and see what you make of it. Called Make Someone Happy.
Found it, reel your world around it.
Remarkable, just absolutely remarkable. And a Canadian woman at that. I hope you've found a comfortable place to sit. Fill up your glass with your favorite beverage. I want to speak with you today about a new narrative. Not exactly new, but new in a way. The fusion within Masonic environments. It's sort of like, you know, when a Grand Lodge was first started some time ago. It was after the civil wars in Britain. I'm thinking of the Grand Lodge as my touchstone is in England. It was after the civil wars, the carnage of the civil war, and the stress and the fear. That we see bright men, bright minds that are defined by their scientific and philosophical endeavors, organizing and sitting down and able to convince the monarch of the day, the king, of the merit of their pursuits. And that was important because that created funding and legitimacy. But what they came up with was this idea of the value of contemplation, of an opportunity for the average man being every one of us, to weigh the major events of the day, major theological and philosophical and scientific discoveries and positions from all angles, to question, to probe. And the derivative of that was a realization that we were overcoming a superstition, although that had happened during the sort of the science renaissance earlier, a couple of hundred years earlier. And out of that, even with the tenets and philosophy of Freemasonry, of the Constitution, of the Grand Lodge, it could not contain the authenticity in a way, because different forms of Masonry began popping up in different places of the world. This gave rise, you see, initially there was no notion of regular or irregular. You think about it. This gave rise to the notion of regular and irregular. How can we possibly have, think of it as our currency and our Masonic economics. We, in a simple form, I think the metaphor holds well, that the our currency is the acknowledgement, the recognition, our ability to predict one another. And that doesn't mean that we're getting out ahead of things. It's that certain ideas are familiar to us. Certain ideas that we share in common are familiar to us, and that galvanizes us and pulls us together. Well, imagine what it would be like if we had we were operating on the edge of some of the third world countries where we have the national currency. And this is happening in Cuba up until not too long ago, probably still is. And the American currency, it creates a bit of a banking problem. It affects the marketplace, doesn't it? And if it affects global trade, because you're never really sure how to calculate a GNP, are we? Regardless, we have to set that aside and think that some singularity, some uniformity is really important and valuable. And so we try to, as best we can, come up with procedures, banking procedures and economic theory that allows for that interface of different currencies. Well, Masonry couldn't quite get there. Formed this notion of regular and irregular. In other words, in a way, it echoed isolationism. And that was more prevalent, of course, on an island like England. And it's uncanny that we're still seeing history play that whole notion out with its the latest vote by the Brexit movement. We're still seeing that notion of isolation, and we're seeing that historically, where we've seen the problems that creates for different nations. We see it repeated. The United States is about to go through that period again in history, in its history, and then we have these other nations, like Italy and Germany, France to a certain extent, and Canada. Realizing that our country needs to be, in order to maintain this lifestyle, we need more people. We're expensive. The base of contributors to our economy needs to broaden. Well, our country is remarkable and huge and largely empty. So we need to be able to have more people, more faces, more brethren, more Masons. And so we in this country have realized the merit of picking the talent. We welcome people to our shores that have some talent and are eager to contribute and to participate in what we have. And similarly with Freemasonry. If you want the benefits of what Freemasonry brings to a man's life, then there are certain things that need to be held consistent. And we can't really do that in an environment where the marketplace is wide open. So to regulate the marketplace, because a wide open marketplace would always come up with something esoteric. It would become a populist competition. This did happen, as a matter of fact, in the selling of new degrees. Well-intended lodges would be duped by a stranger that would come in declaring that he was of a certain Masonic rank and held in his possession new and secret degrees that he would impart on the local brethren for a fee. And at the time, they were, Masons being what they are, they were welcoming. And they were duped. Now, these charlatans, once our brethren weren't fools, anybody can be duped, played, especially when you're in an environment of trust. We only have to look at the lessons of the of the Catholic Church to sort of give our open our eyes just a little wider. What this means is that you within yourself and me within myself need to find a place where we can preserve our sense of trust for our fellow man. The majority of the 7.2, 7.3 billion of us are trustworthy people with the same kind of motives as you and I, trying to get by the best way we can. Absolutely the foundation for Masonry, that empathy for the human condition. But our Grand Lodges couldn't restrict these pop-ups. They couldn't and didn't. So they resorted to a form of economics that comes at a price, this isolationism. That's not to say that dialogue wasn't going on with these other other alternatives. It's not to say that at all. But there was given reason why certain things had to be held consistent. I won't get into them here today, but those decisions weren't done with rigidity in view. They were done to maintain consistency necessary for all participants to be able to arrive at the outcomes that are promised, the exception, what we gave to each other, what I give to the entered apprentice as the master of the lodge, and what he accepts, ancient and accepted Freemason. So you're an accepted Freemason. And you know what was handed to you, the opportunity and the implied promise that you would be educated. The education, I think, has been a little bit of a challenge because for a lot of different reasons, we have had to rely on the precariousness in a way of genius. The genius, we don't manufacture that. What we can do is start to talk about the accepted and expected and achievable level of scholarship. Now, for many, many years when I was new to the craft, like you, I experienced a repetition. In the readings, I was getting and realized that it wasn't so much science, it was opinions. Opinions on layers of opinion on layers of opinion. And in Lodge, there was a lot of repetition. And it was as if that compliance was a hallmark of Freemasonry. Now, our membership began to change, didn't it? We began to become a bit anxious about that and wonder if it was something wrong. If it had to be, you know, we were into, at that point, many papers were written on the notion of blame. You know, it was those people that weren't interested, that weren't pulling their weight. That was, I think, a statement about the lack of leadership, because leadership, as we know, is there to lead and guide and teach. That wasn't on the members who are disinterested. That was on effective leadership to overcome and work with the disinterested, to work with the people. Oh my goodness, how many times have you heard a lovely Mason sit there and say, I don't think that I can do, I never thought I could do that. Admitting that or thinking that he is inadequate and unable to reach any level of Masonic literacy or scholarship. And I found that so disheartening. And you want to, and of course, I just couldn't sit there. I did exactly what you would do. You encourage the fellow to understand the normalcy of what he's thinking. Does anybody at the moment think that they're capable of climbing that peak? Well, in the moment, perhaps not, but you and I, and what we teach our apprentices, is with repeated effort. If you set yourself a goal and you work as hard as you need to achieve that goal, you will get there. And who knows how much effort that takes? Just enough. And how do you know it? How do we know it? In hindsight. In hindsight. That's the imperative. So people have that appetite for understanding and pulling this together. That's the Masonic narrative. And that's been a difficult climb for the many lodges that have been produced over the years. Another quote from our nameless source of inspiration: you never fail until you stop trying. The only real valuable thing is intuition. Now, don't Google it just yet. Everything should be made as simple as possible, he says, but not simpler. Well, that's us. We take something enormously complicated. The difference between genius and stupidity is genius has its limits. It's one of my favorites. There are no limits to stupidity. So collectively, we have a task in front of us. Now, here's the narrative. I want your opinions about this. Waiting is a game. Beginning a new narrative starts with us. Waiting. That is what workmen do. Until we know the plan and our part in it, there is little else to do until the supervisors arrive. And if the supervisors do not arrive, a project does not exist. Ideas don't wait. As they occur, they influence thinking immediately. We know this is the purpose of the democratic institution of a Grand Lodge. Whether it operates according to an autocratic or populist tenet has not rewritten the responsibility of participant vote. In a way, 700 years on, we who sit in lodge, facing one another, bear the responsibility for adaptation. In that place where new techniques, better tools, or trade secrets are shared, are recreating the narrative for Freemasonry. Change is the constant that stabilizes the world. No? Talk to me. Change is the constant. So when we heard the people explaining that, you know, organizing their thinking that change was somehow a detriment, what they were offering us, without knowing it, was instability. If you take away our capacity to change, to morph, how do you think that the craft has existed for, 400, 500 years? How do you think that's happened without change? Well, it hasn't. It's part of its lifeblood. It's part of the DNA of Masonry. We have only to remind ourselves about the fact that we are a school that embraces knowledge. We don't embrace old knowledge. We embrace knowledge. We don't get points for talking about, you know, the origin of species. Yeah, we should understand that. But that doesn't change the 7 million people. There are still people that walk around thinking that we were plundering the jungles with the dinosaurs. Oh, we should be so lucky as a species to exist as long as for the 100 million years that dinosaurs were walking on the face of the earth. Oh, do the math for yourself. How long has us, the species, been on the face of the earth. What are we checking now? 3 million years? Where are the dinosaurs? Well, the last of them are sitting out on my bird feeders, we think. The scientist is telling us that birds are the last elements of the dinosaurs. Put it into perspective. In our lifetime, we've begun to have access to more and more science. In the Masonic lifetime, it was influenced by thoughts of the change in the position, think of it, the change in the position of the earth and man's role on it, and our and theology that the sun was not revolving around us. Well, here, if any of you are Buddhists, you will help us and remind us that each one of us is the center of a universe. In this global, globular notion of hundreds of billions of universes and galaxies made up, endless. Today, what's changed and what we should be, would astound our ancient brethren, is the fact that global scientific output doubles every 9 years. Every 9 years. Now, oh my goodness, is this too fast? Where do you get the idea that there was a timeline on knowledge? Too fast, too slow? Where did that come from? Of course, it is what it is. Realize that Freemasonry puts our haunches down on the apex of this. Because what science is doing is unraveling the mysteries. Science is describing things. It doesn't give us value statements. You and I do that. You and I determine whether something is good or bad, or whether we like it or not. That's you and I. That's our value statements. In the development of science that led up to these growth rates, less than 1% up to the Middle Ages of the second century, to 2-3% in the period between the two wars was the growth rate. Now we're seeing a doubling. 755 million references in 38 million publications from 1980 to 2012. 755 million cited references. Now you and I know we're using computing power to pull all of that data together. We never had that before, and if we had, we would have used it. If we had computer-generated drafting, we would have used it to create the great cathedrals. But the genius with the design is in the mind. That computer, that's far, far, all of the computing power that we've created so far compared to what you have sitting behind your eyes, that's something that's a bit embarrassing. All that mankind has created, we added up, it's 0.004% of the computing potential of human brain. Oh, that should be enormously humbling. What keeps us in check is what we call philosophy. What keeps all of this in context is knowledge, an understanding and an insight that begun in the days of Plato and Socrates and Aristotle. Elements that helped us identify some of the painful attitudes that pull people apart. Hubris being one of the most insidious, I think. And then, thanks to the the thinking in Germany, the language, the certain languages like allow certain expression of certain ideas in better ways. English, when it comes to poetry, perhaps you could, the argument could be made for French, but certainly these composite words, Schadenfreude. I'll ask German-speaking brethren to make sure that I've pronounced that properly. But the idea is finding some enjoyment at the suffering of other people. Somebody we don't like loses an election. It's lovely, isn't it? We savor that privately. That's Schadenfreude. We want to eliminate that because what does that say about our character? It's not very pleasant. That's a dark side. That's part of the darkness that we try to overcome. Our work, ongoing, has never been at odds with change. So the narrative that we need starts not when somebody is elected leader of our organization, but in the marketplace, in the agora, where we rub shoulders and we talk amongst ourselves. The narrative will always be there. Those statements, we've never done it that way before, is what's on the mind of every scientist. We've never done it that way before until now. And now that we know this new ingredient, of course we're going to evolve. We're going to experiment with it. Now, Freemasonry, our constitutions don't really stop that. We're like what's that game where, you know, the little frogs pop up random out of the holes and you take your big soft mallet and you're whacking them, whack-a-mole? Yeah, sort of like that. You try and extinguish an idea that pops up and another idea pops up somewhere else and you can keep trying to whack it down forever. And the autocrats, I love them. They're the best. You know, it's the authoritarian. You know, this is the way it is. Don't question it. Well, you know, that doesn't work. Nowhere in any part of Freemasonry are we talking about compliance. It's like getting with the program. Know that in certain places, there's a decorum that's expected. There's a set of manners and protocols that and it's expected that you know them. It's not like a quarrel. Oh, you're making me do it. No. Grow up. It's that we expect you to figure that out, ask the questions. Sometimes you don't get the right tie, but, you know, little is made of that. It's if you do it as a pattern. Oh, you'll get the hysterics that will be thinking that somehow everything that you do is a statement. A bit ridiculous. Have you ever seen the old lodges when somebody comes in, they're just off the street and they're not properly attired, and what do? They make an accommodation. They make that heartfelt, deep welcome. It is amazing to experience if you haven't. And it happens all over the place. Yeah, we hear those rumors about lodges where it makes a decision about whether they're going to let a stranger sit in that day. We have that. But what you don't hear is that they rarely exercise that, rarely if ever. And was it exercised back in the 30s? Well, I wouldn't exactly consider that a game changer, would you? Perhaps somebody had something private to talk about. Let's give them a little bit of good grace and not think about it as meanness. Of course not. These are our brethren. We want to think of them in the most noble terms. So the sense of this is that waiting... waiting for leaders to change the narrative is really taking responsibility from our shoulders and placing it unfairly on leaders who are there to give us direction. They direct according to the influences that they understand. It's very important then that we stop, that we try to end this ceaseless criticism, this self-deprecating notion that we're doing something, we're missing something, we've done something wrong, or that the membership is indifferent. That's not the case at all. That's not the case at all. Always more can be done. We shouldn't feel that, you know, we're at fault for acknowledging a constant. Yes, of course. That's not like, oh, well, somebody's noticing that I haven't worked 100% of my time on something Masonic. Well, no. You know, when you come, you have that zealous sense and you just are thriving on things Masonic. Well, that doesn't go away. But balance, inevitably balance, those orbits that keep us centered come into play. And it's important that we acknowledge them. And so our private lives compete, do they? Our private lives exist as well as our Masonic existence. Now, rightfully so, Freemasonry has been driven by retired men with a lot of disposable time that they can use as they see fit, chafing against men who have significant work commitments and significant family commitments. At the end of your lifespan, you have less of that. Your family is grown and is relatively established, of course. Your career is behind you. And now what do you use to fill up that free time? Freemasonry as a filler? Yeah, it's there. That's not the philosophical strength of the order, to fill in and occupy a retired man's idle time. Oh, my goodness. Did I say that out loud? I think I was using my inner voice there. The orders, there's orders that are, you know, toying with the idea of being the university of Freemasonry. They're audacious. They may get there one day. They're not there now, just by saying that. But they have ideas at play, bigger picture, and they're embracing the idea of change. Instead of combating, what are you going to do next? Combat the laws of gravity? Well, what would you do if you were thinking that the laws of gravity, that Isaac Newton was just making it all, I mean, he's wrong. What are you going to do now when we begin to calculate the curvature of gravity? What do you do about that? That doesn't exist. Or because you can't spell Hadron Collider, you don't take any interest in superconductive magnets, yeah? But what difference does it make? And understanding more about the moment of singularity, what, you know, that's irrelevant? Well, don't sound the fool if a lot of very talented physicists are doing that work for us. Here, this might help. This might help, right? Remember, the difference between genius and stupidity is genius has its limits. The important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. One of the lines that I love, I dearly love, keep this in mind. If you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. Or also known as the loss of parsimony. You take the complicated projects, the complicated problems, and break them down into their component parts, and then you start to solve that. And as you go along, you're able to articulate how those parts fit together. Remember, if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. Could you explain the Masonic process, the process of what's going on, the evolution of Masonry? Can you explain it yourself? Well, what are you doing forming opinions and telling me how it should be? Don't be getting on my case. Who amongst us? What I hope for is that my little piece of understanding can somehow thrive when it's added to the bigger piece that you bring to the conversation. That's what I hope for. And so I search. I search for people that can contribute at that level. Oh, some of you do, and you know, we've had those conversations. And there's so many more people that I haven't met. And I'm sure that they have a contribution that will help and benefit not only me, but all of us. Here, the whole of science is nothing more than a refinement of everyday thinking. So where did you get that idea that science was somehow alien to your being? It's a refinement. Small is the number of people who see with their eyes and think with their minds. That's you. We're amongst a small group of people who see. Look, aude, vide, tace, and think. You throw your mouth into gear before you've got your mind working. So to all the old silverbacks out there, stand up. You don't have to be hunched down. Imagination, he says, is everything. It is the preview of life's coming attractions. The gift of fantasy has meant more to me than my talent for absorbing positive knowledge. The only real valuable thing is intuition. And excellence is doing a common thing in an uncommon way. Now get this. Drum roll, please. If the facts don't fit the theory, change the facts. Oh, though that one caused me a brain cramp, believe me, that we've got to, do we need a Masonic reference? Of course we do. Of course we do today. Masonic effects rolls on. The narrative needs to begin earlier to influence the genius of our future leaders. Not where they can become swayed and realize their responsibility and try and translate their responsibility into some autocratic notion, some, you know, quasi-militaristic notion of authority. Really? Really? Gee. That's where we get into sort of bankrupt decisions. Yeah. Now, what we want distinctly is that man who believes that leadership is an act of humility and responsibility and service to the membership. That's the Masonic way. Let's talk just, I'll wrap this up with just a little taste of the spread of Freemasonry. Put some of this in context, you know. Things have been changing for a long time. Well, there's a lot of history out there that we don't pay much attention. We don't really give it a second thought. Because we're always trying to be best and beautiful. So I want to talk to you as if none of us have any pomp and circumstance around us, no jewels, no refinery. All the symbols are piled in a corner, all of our credentials in a way. And here we are as God created us, looking at one another. In spite of the fact that by 1730, Grand Lodge had established itself as a governing body in London, which is separate from Britain, the spread of Freemasonry around the known world would soon encounter problems of competing authorities. Nevertheless, the existence of the Grand Lodge model as a basis for authority ensured that a standard of order had been created to which competitors could refer. After 1723, the Grand Lodge began to extend its authority into provincial England, and by issuing deputations, it encouraged the export of the craft abroad. constituting lodges in Spain and India. Provincial grandmasters appear, as does the Central Charity Fund, abundant charitable giving being a central pillar of Masonic activity from that time to this. Brotherly love and truth were held to be diminished principles without the corresponding practice of relief or charity. By 1730, the number of affiliated lodges had grown to 70, according to John Hamill. He cited this in his book called The Craft, printed in 1986. By existing independent lodges agreeing to come under the control of Grand Lodge and by the constituting of new lodges by authority of the Grand Master. As in the case of Scotland, we have the phenomena of lodges appearing when compelled to create records by an external authority. Initially, in the provinces of England, Grand Lodge was, for existing lodges, an external authority. Knowing nothing of lodges' pre-existence, and there are exceptions, records give the impression that in the main, lodges in England came into existence after the founding of Grand Lodge. This can be misleading, as has been shown in the case of Yorkshire Freemasonry and Sir Reverend Neville Barker Cryer's recent book, York Mysteries, revealed. That was printed in 2006, so you should go, might be able to get a copy of that. York possesses records relevant to fraternities of Masons going back to early medieval times. Grand Lodge introduced the concept of recognized and unrecognized lodges. Masons were forbidden to enter unrecognized lodges characterized by irregular practices. As Grand Lodges developed in other countries, this issue of recognition would come every so often to plague the administration of Grand Lodge style jurisdictions everywhere. A foreign Grand Lodge may be recognized as being in enmity with the Grand Lodge of England, but if Grand Lodge decides something has been done that it considers contrary to the landmarks of the craft, recognition can be withdrawn. Rival Grand Lodges may be recognized by the Grand Lodge of England instead. Issues of recognition become particularly acute when rival jurisdictions are seen as operating in the territory of another. By and large, the United Grand Lodge of England will recognize only a single Grand Lodge in any given area, even if the constitution of the other Grand Lodge is regular. However, the Grand Lodge of England does not adopt the strict principle more familiar in the United States, where state Grand Lodges have adopted postures of authority over territory rather than over members. Masons who once met in fraternal goodwill are encouraged earnestly to desist from Masonic contact should the brother belong to an unrecognized Masonic subtlety. Common sense might suggest that such a situation must degenerate on occasion into farce, and this has sometimes been the case. Much of this situation may be traced back to the enormous Masonic influence of the Anderson Constitutions in its various editions. The earliest Irish constitutions were modeled on Anderson's. The Americans in 1735 reprinted Anderson word for word, while the English original, sometimes in pirated editions, went all over the world transmitting the principles and tenets of Freemasonry and in encouraging brethren to found lodges on the English pattern. Get a copy of Bernard E. Jones' Freemason's Guide and Compendium. That was a 1956 printing. That'll help you understand this part of the history. And it's a fairly good reference. In spite of attempts made by the Grand Lodge of England to establish jurisdiction, the Grand Lodge of Ireland was formed on St. John's Day, the 24th of June, 1725. It covered the whole of Ireland, north and south, as it does today. As far as Freemasonry is concerned, Ireland has never been divided. There were time immemorial lodges active before Ireland's Grand Lodge was established. The earliest lodges were established around the southern seaports from Dublin to Limerick and Galway. A very strong link with Maritime Bristol ensures that lodges in Munster will use the famous Bristol working. Scottish masonry has an enviable recorded pedigree, with lodge minutes going back to the very end of the 16th century, as we have seen. Scotland has not yielded evidence for exceptions, however. Ties between symbolic masonry and lodges of stonemasons are stronger in Scotland. Non-trade working gentlemen were initiated directly into the tradesmen's lodges. Accepted masonry appears to have been an English phenomenon. The usual term for the trade in Scotland was mason, rather than the English common usage of freemason. In spite of the act of union between England and Scotland, Scottish masons demanded their own Grand Lodge, and it was duly consecrated in Edinburgh in November 1736. Yay. Some of that mystique generated in the 18th and 19th century around Scottish Freemasonry has gathered about the Royal Order of Scotland, whose origins are obscure. Certain lodges were functioning in London in 1741. The Royal Order now works 2 degrees, the Royal Order of the Hereldom of Kilwinning and the Knight of the Rosy Cross. The word Hereldom is generally considered to derive from the Hebrew Haroedim for overseers, supervising temple construction. Next time we get together, we'll talk about what happens when Freemasonry heads to the continent. Ha ha. Anyway, it's time to go. Sadly, it's time to part. I hope this has been useful for you. We can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. Remember, creativity is intelligence having fun. Don't stop questioning. Oh, and the source of all of those quotes for today? Who else? Albert Einstein. Create those acts of Masonic kindness. I look forward to seeing you again real soon. I hope we've contributed something to the ongoing discussion. Bye. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Bye.